Good afternoon. This is Amy Grisak with Front Range Outdoors. I'm here with my co-host, Marty Bannon, and we are welcoming John Ashley from the International Dark Sky Association Montana chapter. Welcome, John. Thank you so much for joining us.
Hey, Marty and Amy. Thanks for inviting me.
Well, John, where we come, you're coming to us from Kalispell, and Amy sent me a few things for me to read about dark skies. Basically, all I knew about it before I read that article, which was pretty informative, was that light pollution is increasing and our dark skies are going away. Is that pretty much what we're going to talk about today?
I certainly hope so. That'd be better than talking about Bears football.
Oh, we're in trouble now.
Now, the folks who started this movement were astronomers, basically, and it's kind of unfortunate that they called it the dark sky movement, because dark sky, when people hear that, they think dark ground, and dark sky does not mean dark ground at all. So I sort of wish they would have called it the Safer Lighting Society or the Rural Sky Protection Association or something a little more explanatory.
I think
here we are with the dark sky movement.
I think when I read that article, what I got out of it is we should call it smart lighting.
Yes.
Because we definitely need lighting. We just need to be smart about how we employ it and how we use it.
Yeah, exactly. So in the big picture, you know, everybody in Montana knows Charlie Russell. He arrived about four or five generations ago as a teenager. And when Charlie arrived, everyone living in Montana could see a pristine night sky. They could make wishes on shooting stars. They could see comets. They could see the Milky Way. But in just the last four or five generations, the light pollution has grown to a point that we've lost that night sky to all of our kids and adults who live in Montana cities. And we only have pristine skies left in a few rural areas. So the question becomes, what do we do about it? Are we willing to make a few simple changes to protect our pristine night skies that we have left? Or are we going to be the generation that lets those go by for, you know, the future generations of Montana kids?
Now, what kind of reach are you talking about as far as that sky glow from urban areas or even not so urban areas? I mean, how many miles do you have to be away to really get away from it?
Well, that's let me go in a circle to answer that. First of all, when we have a light that isn't shielded, so not all of the light is pointing down, when some of that light is pointing into the sky and you have a town or a city full of lights like that, that accumulation of light is called sky glow. So if you have a small town, a little rural town, you just need to get 4 or 5 miles away to get away from that sky glow, to get back into a pristine sky. But if you have a large city, then you're talking about maybe 100 miles, 200 miles away mm-hmm. from that city to escape that light pollution from that city. So it's a very pervasive form of pollution, but it's also the easiest form of pollution to fix, to solve.
John, is the demographic move to larger cities, is that having, when I was reading the article, I was trying to figure out, would that be a positive? Because I travel in Asia a lot, and, you know, you have standard size cities as people move from the farms to the cities, is you have these 20 million, 15 million, you know, huge cities and more people moving to them. So is that helping in that they're leaving the agricultural areas and moving to the cities so that, yeah, we have these big light sources, but a lot of those twinkling small sources are gone? Or is that, am I thinking about that the wrong way?
Well, I'll give you a mixed answer on that. A lot of the push for the dark sky movement is coming from people who grew up in the country or grew up visiting their grandparents in rural areas and have since moved to the city, and suddenly they realize what's been taken from them, what's missing. You know, you get to a large city with a lot of light pollution, and you can only see maybe a dozen stars in the sky, whereas in a rural location, you should be able to see 4,000 stars in the sky. So a lot of the pushback is coming from people who have moved to cities, and we see that especially in actually a couple of the most conservative states in the country. Texas and Utah are really pushing this dark sky movement along, and Montana's playing catch-up.
So what towns or what cities in Montana are realizing that this is an issue and maybe are taking steps to help keep our darker skies?
Well, actually, almost all of the larger cities in Montana have light outdoor light ordinances.
Okay.
Helena has theirs that started in 2000. Kalispell has one. Livingston, Missoula, Bozeman. I don't think Billings does. It's kind of an outlier. But
and I don't think Great Falls does either.
No, Great Falls doesn't either.
No.
So this came up, you know, 10, 20 years ago, and people passed ordinances. But those are all voluntary ordinances that aren't enforced. And if you compare the maps of light pollution then to the maps of light pollution now, you'll see that these ordinances really haven't done much to slow down the growth of light pollution. So ordinances are good in and of themselves, but public buy-in is really what's important. That's where you make the most progress.
Now, what are some of the things that you'd need to do as part of an ordinance for, say, a city that would help decrease the light pollution? I mean, are there huge changes? Are there little things that can be implemented?
The changes are actually really simple and really common sense once you see them, once you understand them. The easiest and simplest thing we can do is to make sure that all of our light fixtures for outdoor lighting have shields over the light source so that when you're looking towards the light, you see where the light lands and not where the light starts. So if you're looking towards a light that is unshielded, you're seeing a lot of glare from that LED or that light bulb, and that's constricting the pupil in your eyes and making it harder for you to see the light that's on the ground. So just by shielding lights and making sure that all the light points down and not point up into the sky, that would take away the majority of our light pollution issues just with one easy step.
And isn't it also safer when the light is better directed? You know, a lot of people, I think that if you light up everything as much as possible, then you're safer, but that doesn't seem to be the case.
Yes, that's a big misnomer. It seems to make sense that more lighting would make us safer, but in the research that's been done, what they've found is that more lighting makes us feel safer, but it doesn't actually really make us safer. About three quarters of the studies I've been able to find on the subject, when they added more light to an area, crime actually increased. And about, 25% or so of the studies show that when they added more light to an area, crime either decreased or stayed the same. So it's really site-specific. But in most cases, it appears that adding more light actually increases crime.
Now, why is that?
Why is that?
Yes.
Well, because criminals are also afraid of the dark.
Okay.
Adding more lights makes it easier for them to scope out a house or a car to see what is inside, if it's worth breaking into. So you're actually aiding the criminals by adding more light. And then on the safety as far as navigation, by using dark sky friendly lighting reduces or eliminates the glare from the light sources, which makes it much easier, much safer for us to either walk at night or to drive at night without being blinded.
That's true.
I can give you an analogy. Say you're out on a two-lane road in Montana at night driving with your car, and you come upon a car that's coming towards you.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you've got 2,000 pounds of steel and glass hurtling towards you at 70 miles an hour. when the cars get close to each other, you don't both turn on your bright headlights.
That's
you dim
true.
Your headlights. So making, you know, turning on your brights would make it twice as much light, but it would make it much less safe because it reduces your ability to see. It increases the glare. So more light doesn't mean more safety. Better light means more safety, and that's what the dark sky movement is all about, is about better lighting.
John, is there any studies that show percentages of where the light pollution comes from? Is it individual homeowners, industrial sites, or I did notice in that article that Amy sent to me that they were talking about the downside of LED city lights and the effect it was having. It was having a negative effect. At the same time, people are looking at it as a positive. Using LEDs use less energy, but the lights that they were installing were actually producing more light pollution. So have any studies been done of, you know, exactly, for lack of a better term, the worst offenders as far as light pollution is concerned?
You're correct. With LEDs, and most of the light pollution is coming from the street lights that we have in our towns and cities. Those are left on full power all night long, even if there's nobody there. So that wastes a lot of money and creates a lot of pollution. It's sort of like, you know, I get up in the morning and I kind of wobble over towards the coffee pot and I start thinking about what to make for breakfast. I don't turn on the stove burners at full heat, you know, the highest setting, and leave them on all day. Mm-hmm. I just turn them on as much as I need and only for as long as I need them. And we're not doing that with night lights in our towns and cities. We're installing these super bright LED lights that have a lot of blue wavelengths in them and leaving them on all night long instead of dimming them down at midnight or turning them off at midnight like some of the other cities are doing. So the streetlights are a big problem. And then the LED is a whole another issue. It's creating all sorts of bad problems that we're going to have to deal with here in short order. It's sort of like we're replaying the compact fluorescents. Remember when compact fluorescents came out and this was promoted as environmentally friendly and all that? And then once we got all the bulbs in our houses, we learned that, they create a UV exposure problem to sensitive people. Oh, they have all this extra mercury in them. We don't know how to dispose of them. We're doing that. We're repeating that mistake with LED lights. We're putting in thousands and thousands of LED lights that are high Kelvin. So light is measured in Kelvin, the temperature of the light. So a 2,000 Kelvin light would be like an incandescent, you know, kind of warm orange colored. A 5,000 Kelvin light would be blue, or a 4,000 Kelvin light would be blue, like an operating room table light. And so all the street lights that we're putting in are 3,000 Kelvin. And 3,000 Kelvin LED lights produce 3 to 5 times more sky glow than the lights that they are replacing, the sodium vapor lamps. So I have created a dark sky library with all sorts of information on LEDs and other topics that's on our website. It's like 600, I'm up to about 600 links sorted into, I think, 24 categories. So if you want to learn about LEDs and breast cancer, or if you want to learn about LEDs and crime, I've got all those links for you on the website. And it's sort of an annotated bibliography, so I've got a short note above each one that tells you what's in that link.
Now, what is your website, John?
The website, which I'm still building, is montana.darksky.ngo.
Montana.darksky.ngo.
Correct.
Okay, good.
And beyond that website, there are other places you can go to get information, right, John? I mean, there is a International Dark Skies organization, correct?
Correct. Yes, we are the official Montana State chapter of the International Dark Sky Association. So if you hear me say IDA, that I'm referring to the International Dark Sky Association. And they have a great website. It's darksky.org. So just darksky.org.
Now, why did you start the Montana chapter? You started this last year about this time, didn't you?
Yeah, we're about 9 months old now. We became official in May of 2019. We're still populating our board of directors. We've got 7 on board right now. We're about halfway there. So I'm still looking for our board members from cities that don't have representation yet, like Great Falls doesn't have anyone yet.
Hint, hint, nudge,
Bozeman.
Nudge.
What's that?
Hint, hint, nudge, nudge. We have a good astronomy club over here.
You do? Yeah, the Central Montana Astronomical Society. They meet every month, and they hold star parties every month at the parking lot over at the Lewis and Clark Interpretive Center.
They are a great group, so hopefully somebody is listening.
John, how old is the international organization? It's probably only been in the last 5 years that I've actually started seeing articles and hearing scientific discussions of this. But it must have been, scientists must have been aware of light pollution for a number of years and the fact that it was going to increase. It kind of reminds me of the discussion we had 30 years ago. I grew up in California, and everybody in the Central Valley irrigated. We had so much water, we all irrigated overhead irrigation. You know, it was just the easiest. It was the cheapest. Now you can hardly find it there, and water consumption by farmers in California is down 30%. Everybody drip irrigates because kind of like the same reason there. They just didn't know any better there. They had a lot of water. It made sense. Once they saw the downside of that, everybody's gone to drip irrigation. Water consumption is down 30% and continuing to drop. So hopefully we're at that point where, as you kind of mentioned earlier, it's an education process. There's so many people out there that really don't know. When you put a light bulb in, the brighter, the better. The more light you shine out there, the better. So your descriptions are just eye-opening to a lot of people.
Yes, the Dark Sky Association started in the late 80s, so it's not very old. And like I said before, it was started by astronomers, but it's kind of been taken over by ordinary citizens like myself. I'm not an astronomer. I've never had an astronomy class. But I learned about this about 5 or 6 years ago and started researching and teaching myself about it. So it started as a movement among scientists, and it's kind of grown into this movement among the general public. But like you say, we're young. It's primarily just a matter of education, of getting the word out. And it's interesting, once you see what a good light is and once you see what a bad light is, there's no going back. Everywhere I go, I see, oh, that light's unshielded. Oh, that light's the wrong color temperature. It's just, oh, that's a beautiful light. That's great. And you just can't unsee it once you learn the difference. And it's all common sense, too. So I appreciate you guys helping me get the word out.
Well, and I think it's important, too, because a lot of adults and, of course, a lot of children, it's slipping away without many of them realizing it. And, you know, those of us who can get away from it, you know, I know you trek back in the backcountry a lot, and Marty's done the Continental Divide Trail. It's one of his favorite places. And so he's been back where there's nothing, but you do start noticing it, even in those wild places.
Yeah, that's one of the things I worry about, is that, you know, the kids growing up today don't know what they're missing. They don't know what's been taken from them in the skies over the cities. It's really fun when you go to a star party in a dark area and have people, you know, from out of town or out of state or out of country show up. and it slowly gets dark and they see the Milky Way for the first time, and it's just awe-inspiring. And I mean, some people are brought to tears. It's just, it's a wonderful thing. And you talk about being in the backcountry. I'm a biologist, but I'm also a photographer, and I've got photos that I took that helped me learn about light pollution. Like, I have a photo of a comet that I made over Lake Donald, and the lower part of the horizon is pink, and that pink is light pollution from Lethbridge, which is like 80-something miles away from where my camera is.
Yeah, that blows my mind.
I got a picture of the Milky Way over the Chinese Wall, deep in the heart of the Bob Marshall, and there's this little tiny glow of yellow down on the horizon, and that's light pollution from Helena, visible all the way, visible to my camera at least, all the way from the heart of the Bob Marshall. So it's a very pervasive thing, and it's so insidious and slowly creeping that we don't notice it, one light bulb at a time, growing and growing and getting brighter and losing the stars, one at a time. But people are starting to come around to it and realize what's being taken from us and trying to find ways to save it.
Well, John, I did notice I was down in the Gila Wilderness in New Mexico, and I noticed, and it's on my list to go back to it, but I was driving in a remote area there, and the National Forest had designated a campground as a dark skies campground.
The Cosmic Campground.
Yes, north of Silver City, between Silver City and Pinetown. I didn't drive down to it, but I took a picture of the thing and headed down there this spring, and I plan to go down to it. I'm just wondering, so is it a campground? Is it just a remote campground, or is it does the National Forest do something special to make that a dark skies campground? Obviously, it probably has all the right kind of lighting and whatever, if there is lighting there.
That campground is just fortunate to be out in a rural area where it's still dark, and the local town, the closest town to it, it's like the folks from the Chamber of Commerce looking for ways to bring people to their town, bring tourism and visitors and whatnot to their town, realize what they had in this dark sky as a resource that's valuable to other people. And so they started promoting this dark sky campground. We're working on a similar project here in Montana. I've overlaid, the light pollution maps across the whole state and picked out 50 of the darkest public campgrounds in Montana. And I'm creating a dark sky trail for each of the 6 Visit Montana regions. I hope to have that up pretty soon, and then we'll start advertising it in the spring, so in time for people to plan their summer outings. One of the basic tenets of economics is the more rare something is, the more valuable it becomes. Mm-hmm. And so right now, at this point in the U.S., we only have 4 or 5 patches of pristine dark skies remaining. The rest of the U.S. is light polluted. And so we have a lot of people actually seeking out dark areas where they can experience the night sky, where they can see the Milky Way for the first time. And that's called astrotourism. It's like the newest hot thing right now in the travel industry. So Montana's hopefully going to be able to benefit by promoting its astrotourism, its dark skies. But we're a little bit behind some of the other states on that.
Now, where are some of the best areas in Montana to see those dark, dark night skies?
Well, if you go to our website, I've got the overall map of Montana up and online already, so you can see what's still dark. There's a big swath of dark skies through east central Montana around the Charlie Russell Refuge.
Okay.
And then the southeastern corner down towards Ekalaka, the southwestern corner. And then it's funny, our only dark sky park right now in Montana is in Glacier Park, but glacier, it's actually not pristine. It's got light pollution.
I know.
So some of these other areas are actually darker than Glacier National Park.
And they're still working on compliance for the designation, correct? To get down, what, 66% of the lighting within the compliance with the IDA?
Yeah, there's different types of dark sky designations, and a group of us spent a number of years applying to have Glacier and Waterton National Parks designated as an international dark sky park. So that application was successful, and once it's approved, then you have that opens a window. You have 3 years to change out the light fixtures so that you have two-thirds of them are dark sky compliant. They're shielded so they don't shine light up into the sky. And then I think you have another 5 years to reach 100% compliance. So right now, Glacier is almost at two-thirds compliance, not quite, but they hope to be by this winter. Their deadline comes up in the spring. And then actually, there's a number of state parks that we're working on right now. We're in the process of applying for dark sky status for the state parks.
Excellent.
And one National Wildlife Preserve and Yellowstone is actually working towards their application, but they don't want to start the clock until they get closer to two-thirds compliance because they have so many thousands of light fixtures.
Oh, I bet.
But Yellowstone is working that direction,
too. Oh, that's excellent. Because you had to count every light fixture in Glacier, didn't you?
Yeah, for a dark sky application, you have to have a spreadsheet of every single light source in that within that perimeter.
So, yeah, that was a big project, but it was great that it's done and making steps forward.
Yeah, that was a huge success for Sierra Montana. That's our springboard. We're State Parks is really interested in the idea of dark skies. They just are moving a little bit slower because of staffing issues. But State Parks wants to go this direction as well.
Hey, John, I'm going to toss this out there. We've got a small group, and we're working on a Montana Trail, an ultra-long trail. Takes in part of the Continental Divide Trail, so it comes down through Glacier, down through the Bob, and then down by Butte, it heads into the Pioneers, which are pretty remote, and then down into the Tandoys, and then basically heads east and up through the Gravelies and up to Livingston, and then eventually goes north through a bunch of the island mountain ranges and picks up the wild and scenic Missouri River and heads east. I'd like to send you that routing of that trail sometime, and I think it goes through a lot of those places that you also identified as some of the darkest places, and maybe you can just give me what you think about some of those areas as ideal places that we can also advertise on that trail as places that qualify as dark sky areas.
Yeah, from your description, it sounds like most of it is in pretty dark, remote areas, so I think you can't go wrong, but there will be certain regions that are a little bit darker than others. So yeah, I'd be happy to do that for you.
Well, I appreciate that, and would you like to give our audience again some places they could go for more information here as we have about a minute left?
Well, the mothership, the big organization, is the International Dark Sky Association, which is based out of Tucson, Arizona, and their website is darksky.org. Excuse me. We are the official Montana state chapter of that organization, and our website is montana.darksky.ngo. And then we have a generic email address where people can, if they have specific questions, they can get a hold of me. That email is info.montana@darksky.org. And like I said, there's all sorts of information and resources available on our website, which are specific to Montana. So that's a great place to start.
Well, you've been listening to Front Range Outdoors on KGPR Great Falls with Marty Bannon and Amy Grisak, and we're talking with John Ashley from the International Dark Sky Association, the Montana chapter. So thank you so much for joining us today, John, and we're all going to look at the skies in a different way now.
All right. Thanks for inviting me.
Front Range Outdoors is a locally produced program and can be heard every other Tuesday at 1:30 p.m. right here on your local voice, 89.9 FM, KGPR, Great Falls.